It's the Locked On Podcast Network. Local experts on the biggest stories.
You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network, episode 366, sort of like Nick Foles' passing yardage 366, not far off there. It's Sam Ekstrom and Sage Rosenfels the day after a spectacular Super Bowl in downtown Minneapolis. Super Bowl 52 results in an upset. The Philadelphia Eagles 41, New England Patriots 33. Our very own Sage Rosenfels was in the building last night for another outstanding Super Bowl involving the Patriots. Sage, tell me if you were thinking the same thing as me last night. It's 33-32. The Eagles have the football and are driving. I said out loud, the only way the Eagles win this game is if they use the entire clock and win it on a field goal with no time, because they can't give it back to Brady. So when they gave it back to Brady, I was fully prepared for the New England Patriots comeback, the iconic Brady touchdown in the closing seconds, and the Eagles flipped the script on it last night. The strip sack of Brady, and then the Hail Mary coming up short in the closing seconds. A total reversal of fortune for the Eagles last night. They played an unbelievable football game going toe-to-toe with New England.
They did, and they were the better all-around team, really from 1 to 46, that dressed in that football game. The Eagles, I tell you what, for Vikings fans, got to feel pretty good that even though we lost badly in that championship game, you lose to the winners who dethroned the Patriots. And so I guess that's good for Vikings fans. Maybe we weren't as bad as we thought we were in that championship game. The Eagles were, said top to bottom, the best team in football. They won with their backup quarterback, backup left tackle, backup Mike linebacker. They missed a lot of key pieces for the majority, if not all, of the season, and still brought home the Lombardi Trophy. So fantastic game. Nick Foles was incredible. He threw one interception, but really that was actually about a perfectly thrown ball that was basically sort of dropped or fumbled around and intercepted. But other than that, an incredible performance by him. Tom Brady, I tell you what, when you're up by Tom Brady by about five or six, that's like the worst number to be up by him. It just felt like the Patriots were going to come back when the Eagles were up six one time, and they're up five another time. Just felt like, all right, well, Tom's going to do another fourth quarter drive and come back and win this thing with a touchdown. And the strip sack, that was, there was a lot of big plays in that game, but at the key moment, that was the biggest play in the game, and got the Eagles to an 8-point lead with only less than a minute left for Tom to try to come back. And he still somehow got him to midfield, and they had a chance with the Hail Mary, and somehow Tom Brady did not come through this time.
Yeah, and if they hadn't done the silly razzle-dazzle on the kick return and cost themselves 15 yards, that might have changed that end-game approach. They might have gotten a little closer, too. Yeah, how about Brady, though? He loses his most explosive receiver in the first half. Brandon Cooks out, and he doesn't miss a beat, just goes off for 505 passing yards. They don't punt once in the game. And frankly, the Eagles were lucky in the first half, because I would argue that, or on the field goal where they bobbled the snap and missed, I think they probably should have gone for it on fourth and one, to be honest with you. And the fact that they didn't, you know, they didn't get the three, they didn't get the seven, they probably could have scored there. Then they went on it, they went for it on fourth and five from the 35. That could have been a field goal, too. I mean, they left points on the scoreboard early. Then they weren't stopped in the second half until that strip sack. It was a miraculous performance by Brady, and I don't want to detract from it, because I don't know if I've ever seen a quarterback that locked in for three and a half quarters like Brady was last night. He was really outstanding.
He crossed the 400-yard mark, I believe, with about 3 minutes left in the third quarter. I mean, he was on pace for 600 yards passing or something. I mean, it was absolutely incredible, his performance. Yes, as you said, without Brandon Cooks, I mean, without Julian Edelman, I mean, obviously he's been out for the whole year, but without really probably his two best receivers going into the season, were out. And Cooks, for the vast majority of the football game, and he goes over 500 yards passing. Absolutely incredible. He was probably the better quarterback. Foles played great, but at the end of the day, from top to bottom, the Philadelphia Eagles are a better football team. Really interesting note, and I'm not sure people how much they were talking about on TV, but Malcolm Butler, who had been one of the best cornerbacks for the Patriots for the last about three seasons, yeah, really since that Super Bowl interception of Russell Wilson, does not play one defensive snap in the football game. He had been playing poorly lately. They had the other guy who ended up starting and playing the most of the game, practicing with the starting group all week, but still a surprise when your secondary is getting torched, like the Patriots were, with Foles throwing for 366 yards, that Malcolm Butler, had been one of your better players, sits on the bench and doesn't get any reps.
Yep, that was definitely a big storyline on TV. Michelle Tafoya tried to ask Belichick about it at halftime, and he was pretty mum, just said we put the best players out there to win the football game, blah, blah, blah. Not sure we'll ever get a straight-up answer, but I know Malcolm Butler was very upset after the game. Did a little cussing, a little swearing at the reporters, said that they gave up on him. That's very interesting, and maybe one of the few bad coaching moves that Belichick has made, and maybe trying to outsmart himself. Maybe Butler has been really poor in practice recently, so we'll make this move. It's really, really tough to see where that would come into play. Gosh, there's so many coaching moves to talk about in this game. How about the
fourth down call, the fourth from the 2 yard line.
Yeah, the tight end pass.
On the direct snap to the running back, reverse pass. I think they called it Philly special. I was in the press conference last night with both Foles and head coach Doug Peterson. They stole that play from the Chicago Bears.
Yep.
Did it last year. Against the Vikings, I believe it was a week 17 game.
Yeah,
they stole that from the Vikings or from the Bears and used it on a 4th and 2 in the Super Bowl. Absolutely incredible.
I was kind of step for step with Collinsworth on that one because I said this might decide the game. Not so much if they get that, if they go up by 10 like they did. I didn't think that was going to be over, but if they failed to get that conversion and only went up 3 in a halftime, that to me felt like a potential game-swinging play. Like, you had to convert there, and they did. And then they went for it on 4th down later in the game. I'm trying to remember the circumstances, but they converted to Ertz, I believe, on a 4th down.
Yeah, about 4th and 5 or some from maybe now it's about a 4th and 2 from their own about 40-yard line, and Ertz got about 3. I tell you what, Doug Peterson is the coach that goes for it. And that was sort of the talk with the media last night. The players love that. You know, they like using the word gutsy. I think I heard the word gutsy about 4 times. I mean, he doesn't necessarily play all the odds and the statistics. He goes with his gut, with his intuition. He's aggressive. He goes for and 4th down a lot. And I think his players feed off of that. And, maybe something that Mike Zimmer should think about a little bit more often. Is not always playing the conservative way, which most NFL head coaches play. And I think somebody said last night, that Doug Peterson said, if you play conservatively, you end up 8-8. To win a Super Bowl, you have to take chances. And he took a lot of chances last night, and almost every single one of them worked out for him.
Well, I'm trying to think back through Philadelphia's second half drives, because, and I think they scored literally every time they had the ball in the second half.
I believe there's one punt in the game.
Yes.
I believe Donnie Jones had one punt in the football game, and that was it.
Yep. The Eagles go touchdown, field goal, touchdown, field goal on their 4 second-half possessions. And I think that was the only way they were going to win, is if they scored every time they had the ball. And I thought for a moment it was going to have to be a touchdown every time, because the Patriots were just coming and coming and coming. They scored 3 touchdowns out of the chute right in the second half. And,
yep.
And but then the drive down 1, chewing up 7 minutes, getting that touchdown to Ertz, which, by the way, that brings us to the catch rule stuff.
That was definitely a catch, not even close.
Yeah.
He caught it, took 3 steps, was lunging it towards the goal line to stick the ball out after he had caught and run with it. I didn't even think that was close at all. And I'm glad the NFL made the right decision on that. That would open up a whole can of worms with the Patriots and what some people think is a conspiracy. The Patriots always get the big call. That was the right call on that play to Ertz. And again, what a great throw by Nick Foles fitting in that window on a huge play.
Well, credit the Eagles receivers, because the last two games against the Vikings and then last night, they made some amazing catches in the end zone and then going to the ground secured the ball every time, whether it was Clement last night, the Wisconsin running back who, you know, it was James White last year, the Wisconsin running back, and this year it was Clement who had 100 yards receiving, led the Eagles, scored a touchdown, had that other somewhat questionable catch back line of the end zone. But then you've got Jeffrey, you know, securing the ball on the back line. Their skill players are good. And that's, I think, why Nick Foles had so much success, because, I mean, he just had great supporting cast around him. Ajayi was awesome again. Blunt was good last night. Everybody showed up around Foles who needed to.
Well, and that's the thing with that. This Eagles offense is they use all of their weapons. You know, in traditional NFL offenses, you basically play three receivers. You would say you play probably two tight ends, and you have, let's just say, two running backs at this point. Well, they use three tight ends. They use all three running backs in different ways. You know, when Blunt comes into the game, like LeGarrette Blunt, he's probably going to be more of a downhill runner. Jai does some of the same things, does a little of everything. And then Clement, man, he can run the football in the backfield, but, you know, a lot of wheel routes and what we call bullet routes, you know, down the sideline and one-on-one type stuff. He's a special back, and he's also short and strong and powerful. He does a lot of good things. And so, yeah, they use, you know, four wide receivers, three tight ends, and three running backs all very well. It's almost like they have packages for each player.
All right, well, now we'll ask you some of the stuff that we didn't get to see at home. So describe the atmosphere in the stands and compare it, I suppose, to the last time you were at a game in that stadium.
Yeah.
Compare it to, like, a Vikings home game. What was the noise like during commercial breaks? What was going on?
Yeah, so we didn't – so I'll start with this. I would say the Eagles had about a 2-1 fan advantage in that football game, you know, the 65,000, 66,000 that were there. And I'm just going to throw out a number of, 30,000 Eagles fans, 15,000 Patriots fans, and then 15,000, the Chad Greenways of the world, who I saw was in the stands last night, who really weren't rooting for anybody, and just happy to be there. During commercial breaks, they showed the Eli Manning New York Giants dancing commercial, which everyone laughed at. I thought it was a great tweet last night. I saw that Tom Brady is 0-3 in Super Bowls that Eli Manning has appeared in, including last night. But many times they would have Scott Hansen, who's the Red Zone Channel, the host of the Red Zone Channel.
Yeah.
He would come on, and he interviewed Alan Page at one point. He would talk about the game. He would transition to this, that, and the other. They sometimes would, have other commercials maybe on in the stadium. So there's really all sorts of things that they would have on. But we really didn't see very many actual commercials that everyone saw at home. But we did see that New York Giants commercial, which was hilarious.
All right. How was Timberlake? On TV, looked like he knocked it out of the park. How was it in person?
Well, I actually taped a lot of it on my phone, and I'm sitting sort of on the east side in the second row of the upper deck, and so I've got this great view from the back of the end zone. And to be honest with you, it's not nearly as good as I'm sure it was in TV. I mean, those things are made for TV.
Yeah.
In the stadium, it's okay. You can hear it okay. You're so far away that you don't see all the razzle and dazzle. And I mean, he's just a tiny little speck. And you sort of go like, where is Timberlake at this point? You know, they have all this stuff going on the field. But that was definitely made for TV. I'm sure it looked great from home. And I thought it was cool as I got home last night and watched Jimmy Kimmel Live from the Orpheum. And Timberlake was on there as well. And then Chris Stapleton. And that was a neat show to have on. And by the way, Minneapolis, unbelievable job. I think the weather was not really a big issue. Yeah, it was cold, But it is cold in Minneapolis, and I think that the day and age of Lyfts and Ubers and all the transportation, and I think it's really a perfect city to host a big event like that. You know, almost every event I went to was downtown, near downtown, or northeast, or maybe even uptown, you know, very close to the city, and it was, you know, very easy to get around for the most part. And I think the invention of, as I said, Uber and Lyft made getting from one place to the other without having to park all the time and really have to deal with the cold a great place to host a Super Bowl.
Yep. My wife and I definitely utilized Uber a couple times. We went to the convention center, did the Super Bowl experience, went to Super Bowl Live yesterday. Amazing. All the fans that were just hanging out downtown yesterday at like 12, 1 o'clock, just getting ready for that game. And by the way, speaking of Timberlake, you got to see him up close at Paisley Park. So you kind of got the more intimate experience with him, didn't you?
I did, yes. On, what was that, on Thursday? Thursday I got an invite out to Paisley Park. And he did a album release party. He did not play, which was the real bummer. We were all sort of hoping that, okay, Timberlake, if he doesn't play his songs, maybe he'll play a Prince song or two. You know, The Revolution played later on that night. We thought maybe he'd go play The Revolution. Did not happen. So that was a bummer, but it was neat to be able to be in Paisley Park. Probably will be the only time in my life I'm ever there. And then to obviously hear Timberlake's new album and then see The Revolution play. And they were fantastic. I actually stood next to Andrew Zimmern. It seemed like a lot that night. And he and I are discussing all sorts of things. Another great Minnesotan that was in the house.
So many cool things that happened this week. It's too bad that there was that cold element for sort of the Nationals to come in and say, well, this place can't host another Super Bowl because the sponsors can't get their outdoor activities or they can't get as many eyeballs on their products, which is too bad, because I did feel like especially the local people really embraced it, and all the tourists who came in from Northeast, I think they embraced it too. Obviously New Englanders and Philadelphians, they can withstand this kind of cold too.
Well, I think, you know, listen, it's you know, Super Bowls like in Miami, for example, or even Phoenix, Arizona. Those stadiums are in the middle of nowhere. I mean, the Miami stadium is off this sort of turnpike between Miami and Fort Lauderdale, and you know, there's really nothing around it. And same goes with Phoenix. It's way in West Phoenix. There's really nothing around. But in this situation, you know, people were taking the skyways, you know, from their hotels, or I said, you know, very short Lyft rides right over to the stadium. Everything was downtown. So much was downtown. And it was just really, you know, Minneapolis is a very centralized city. So I think it absolutely put on a fantastic Super Bowl. They may not get another one, you know, ever again. But if that's the case, I think they put on an unbelievable Super Bowl. There's not much more they could have done better. I mean, they got Justin Timberlake, one of the great, you know, musicians and entertainers in this day and age, and they got him to perform, and I think the parties were fantastic. So, you know, job well done by everyone involved. And I thought I saw in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, they listed all the names of all the volunteers, thousands and thousands of volunteers to make this thing happen.
And they were so friendly, all of them. A lot of smiles, a lot of hellos, very helpful in the skyways, helping people get from point A to point B. Big picture perspective on both these teams, and then we'll wrap the show. Big picture for New England. Clearly, the defense left a little something to be desired in this game. It was a strong defense for most of the year, but you lose your coordinator to the Lions on defense. You lose your offensive coordinator to the Colts. Where do the Patriots go from here with Brady, who's, by all accounts, coming back next year? Rumors of unrest between Kraft and Belichick. What happens next now for this New England dynasty?
You know, I actually have serious concerns about the Patriots. I don't know if their dynasty is going to continue like it has been. I mean, since Josh McDaniels got fired a few years ago from his head coaching job, then I think he had a year as the St. Louis Rams offensive coordinator. Then he's been in New England. Patricia's been there for a long, long time. They lose both those guys. And, you know, and Brady's not getting any younger. So I do have, and you know, Gronkowski, he even made a comment that he's going to, you know, start thinking about his future. I mean, I couldn't imagine him retiring, but that guy has been beat up a lot in his career. He's made his big contracts. He's had a lot of hits to the head as well. He does understand all that. He catches a lot of balls over the middle. It's a very physical game. He's still an unbelievable player with, I think, 2 touchdowns last night. But he's not getting any younger either. And tight ends usually, that play, the way he plays, as physical as he plays, they don't usually last until they're 36 years old either. So we might be nearing the end here. And I couldn't imagine, Brady playing without Belichick and Belichick coaching without Brady. I just don't see that happening. In particular, now that Jimmy Garoppolo is no longer the backup quarterback, they'd be completely starting from scratch there in New England. So next year is interesting. I guess I'm going to be one of those. It's early on, but I got to be one of those people that does not pick the Patriots to go far next year. I think that they're coming to the end of their road.
You could very well be right about that. The funny thing is that if you listen back to talk radio, like the day after the Patriots lost to the Giants in both the Giants Super Bowls, honestly, I bet you would have heard the same conversation about this is the end. They're not going to bounce back from this. And then here they are.
Decade. I think, like I said, they're losing both coordinators. Like I said, Brady's getting older. Belichick's getting older. It just sort of feels like to me that, they're obviously going to ramp it up and sure make a run, and they'll probably win the AFC East. But it just sort of feels like, that magic might be gone. I've said, in particular, losing two coordinators. Brady and Josh McDaniel were very, very close. And I think Josh McDaniel is a really good offensive coordinator, designs a lot of plays. That are very advantageous and man-to-man coverage and all things that Brady sees all the time. And they've been a heck of a team the last few years. And so it just seems like they're losing a lot, and Brady is getting older. He's still absolutely fantastic, but it's different when you lose your offensive coordinator and replace him with somebody else that's on the staff or somewhere else in the NFL.
Yeah. I don't know what they're going to do at OC. I think I saw a report already that they're going to bring in Greg Schiano as their defensive coordinator, who's been certainly in the news. Hasn't been the most popular coach in the world in his tenure, but that's what they're going to do defensively speaking.
And then, as you know, in the past, Belichick has taken over a lot of those responsibilities sometimes. If they have a new defensive coordinator, he basically has become the defensive coordinator. He's 65 years old now. I don't know if he has that much energy to grind as much as a regular defensive coordinator grinds. He was doing that 5-7 years ago, but I said he's 65. I'm not sure he's up for that much many late night hours and that much work after losing his coordinators here.
Right. Well, different case for Philadelphia. They're getting everybody back, including Nick Foles if they want. He's still under contract. I can't really envision a scenario where Carson Wentz isn't the starter next year, even though Doug Peterson didn't really say either way. He was asked about it, but I'm sure Carson Wentz takes that job back. So the question becomes, do you shop Nick Foles, try to get value for him when his value is as high as it will ever get, or do you just hang on to him? He's a pretty affordable, great second-string quarterback to have, and obviously a legend now in Philadelphia. What do you do if you're Philadelphia with the quarterback?
My guess is they leave Foles where he is. That's just a guess based off of a couple of things. One, they now understand the value of a backup quarterback. Two, they don't know if Carson Wentz is going to be healthy by the beginning of the season. And since they don't know that, and usually if somebody's going to trade for a quarterback, they like to do it at the late spring, early summer, so that quarterback can be there for the offseason, be there for the OTAs. And get all that work. If you're going to trade a first rounder or a second rounder for a guy, you want him there all summer to be around the offense and all those types of things. And so being that they will not know if Carson Wentz is 100% healthy probably until sometime in the early summer, late summer, I don't know if they'll want to get rid of their backup quarterback. Having said that, if they can get a first and a third or a first and a fourth like they got for Sam Bradford, which helped them improve their roster to win the Super Bowl, if somebody offers something like that, which I highly doubt, they might jump on it. So, it may come down to what they feel about Nate Sudfeld, who is now the backup, really the third string quarterback, may come down to what they think about him. So my guess is, they understand, they truly understand the value of a really good backup quarterback, and they'll keep Nick Foles for another year.
Right, and I believe Carson Wentz got hurt on December 3rd. If you're taking into account the nine-month recovery for an ACL, that takes you to September 3rd.
Yeah,
and
there you go.
September 3rd,
right
is, that's 1 week before week one, you know, and if it takes 2 weeks longer, well, then you're going to need someone else to start for a bit. So,
yeah, I always say if you're going to tear ACL, do it like in September, not in December. It really does change your outlook for the entire next season.
Yeah, so Carson Wentz, instead of doing OTAs, he's going to be in rehab. Instead of doing training camp, he's not going to be able to practice unless they medically clear him. So, yeah, they're going to need somebody else besides Carson Wentz next year for sure in some capacity. It's been a great week, great Super Bowl, and I guess the offseason now truly begins in earnest. And, you know, free agency ramping up here. It'll start in about a month, and the rumors will probably start floating before that. So plenty to gear up for here on Locked On Vikings. Thanks for your insights on Super Bowl 52. Have a safe trip back to Nebraska.
I will do. What a great season. What a great game yesterday to cap it off. And, you know, I don't know how ratings and all those things were this year, but I tell you what, in Minneapolis, Minnesota this week, in St. Paul, and in that stadium yesterday, it felt like, you know, football was on top of the world and was never popular. It was it was quite the week and quite the game.
Yep. Be proud if you're a Minnesotan, because they definitely put on a great spectacle. It's Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network, at Sam Ekstrom, at Sage Rosenfels, or LockedOnVikings.com.